90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today our guest is Mr. Melvin Gadsden, and he was here back in March to talk about the American Rescue Plan, and he's here today to talk about end-of-the-year tax strategies, but also the impact of the Build Back Better bill not being approved and becoming legislation and how that would impact Americans. Good morning, Melvin. Welcome back to Cowtown Conversations. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Melvin?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I am a CPA, and I operate out of the Kansas City area, metro area. I have clients in Kansas City, but also have clients around the country. I went to school at Park University and got my bachelor's of accounting, and I also have a master's of accounting. And an MBA as well. And I also have about 9 years of accounting experience and tax experience as well.
But also, Melvin, you are a licensed CPA. I know that people don't understand what you have to go through to get that licensed CPA and that 3-day test. So can you tell us just a little bit what it means to be licensed as a CPA?
Yeah, absolutely. So in order to get the CPA, you have to take 4 tests. It used to be back in the day you had to take it over a 3-day period, but now the test is longer, and so there's more questions. They take a deeper dive. The pass rate is somewhere between 35% and 50% of the people who take the test pass it. You have to have a master's degree to even begin taking the test. And so there's a lot of barriers to getting into the profession, but the tests are four tests, and they're about 4 hours per test, and it's extremely challenging and requires a lot of discipline to go through that study process.
Melvin, you were an accountant in corporate America, and now you're president of your own firm. Which do you enjoy more, working in corporate America or working for yourself, being an entrepreneur?
I've enjoyed working more as an entrepreneur, and I think the reason why is because, I get a chance to connect with people more directly. Working in corporate America, you're working internally, and so your focus is on helping a company, whereas opposed to when you work in the public accounting sector, your focus is working with, small businesses. Or at least for me, it's working with small businesses and individuals, and so it's much more relatable of the type of work that I do. So I really enjoy connecting with people and helping them achieve their financial goals.
And your firm, Gadsden CPA, does individual tax returns and planning. They do accounting services, and they also do business preparation and tax planning. Can you briefly talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So tax planning is pretty much at the crux of what I do. So small businesses and certain individuals, there's complexity in their finances, particularly with small business owners. A lot of times they don't understand all of the compliance-related issues that they have to deal with. They frankly just don't understand accounting, and because they're so busy, trying to build their business and bring revenue into their business, they often neglect, handling this very important task of paying taxes and understanding, the factors that go into how to lower the amount of taxes that they pay. And so that's where I come in. I bring clarity and simplicity to that process and help them to plan so that they know how much money they're going to be paying in taxes.
Well, right now, Melvin, we're seeing an increase in inflation. How bad is inflation right now in regards to periods that we went through in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. The economy right now is experiencing higher than usual inflation. It's right now it's around getting close to 7%. Normal inflation, what the central banks of the world has kind of arrived at, has been around 2%. We have had lower than normal inflation for a good period of time, but right now we are experiencing the highest inflation levels in the past 40 years. And so it's definitely something that's relevant, and it's kind of puts more focus and importance on, you know, making sure that, you know, you got a budget in place, you know, just trying to make as much money as you can to counter that, as well as saving money. And one of the key areas I like to help people save money in is in taxes.
So, Melvin, when you were on back in March, we were talking about the just-passed American Rescue Plan and many of the benefits in the American Rescue Plan, such as the expanded child tax credit, that would have been extended by the Build Back Better Plan, but now looking at ending at the end of this month, how will this impact taxpayers and families?
Well, I mean, simply put, there's just going to be less money available to them. So with the American Rescue Plan Act, the child tax credit was something that was kind of a stimulus to families, you know, that if you had a child, you'd get up to $1,600, $1,600 more, you know, in your pocket. And so that's for people who had children under six. So for each child under six, you'd get an additional $1,600. Then any child that you had that was six and older, up to the age of 17, you'd get an additional $1,000 per child. That credit was fully refundable. And so people enjoyed that this year, 2021. And the Build Back Better plan, that was actually set to extend the child tax credit into 2022, which would have been even more money for taxpayers with children. So unfortunately, that didn't pass, and it's getting more and more questionable as to whether that will. With the tight split between, you know, Democrats and Republicans, it's not looking like it's going to pass. So that actually ended up causing a pretty sharp decrease in the market, in the stock market, earlier this week, which has since rebounded a little bit. But yeah, definitely not the greatest news for taxpayers with children.
So, Melvin, with the Build Back Better plan, was there any legislation that would impact anything else that taxpayers may be receiving now, or a credit or something that may have been on the table that now is going to be off the table?
Yeah, so there was also the Earned Income Tax Credit that was expanded by the American Rescue Plan Act for 2021. In the Build Back Better plan, that was going to get extended into 2022. Essentially, what that did was it made more people eligible for the Earned Income Credit because there was an upper age limit. In other words, there was an age limit as far as how old you could be, and there was also a lower age limit as far as how young you could be to receive the Earned Income Tax Credit. For those who doesn't know, the Earned Income Tax Credit is a credit for lower income taxpayers. So not only did it widen the range of people eligible for it, but it also increased the amount that you could get for the Earned Income Tax Credit if you didn't have kids. So if you didn't have kids and you had low income, the maximum that you could get was an extremely low amount. of a tax credit, and that actually got increased to $1,500. But again, that was for 2021 only. And now, with this news that the Build Back Better plan is not going to get passed, or potentially, and most likely not going to get passed, that means less money for these people that, you know, were affected by the Earned Income Tax Credit expansion.
So a lot of people who may not, who didn't qualify, now they will qualify due to the American Rescue Plan, but because the Build Back Better is not going to be, right now it looks like it's DOA, dead on arrival, due to Senator Manchin. So now those families that were receiving those benefits are going to lose those benefits at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's correct. So ultimately that means less money for lower income taxpayers and taxpayers that have children. And so, yeah, unfortunately that's the news of the day. You know, now I will say that the Build Back Better plan did have some pretty strong implications for people who were in the higher income tax brackets, who were making, you know, in the millions, they were getting taxed more. And so it was probably good news for them. But ultimately, that the Build Back Better plan was a bill that has some spending in it, and it also had some revenue raisers by way of raising taxes on higher income taxpayers. So I would anticipate that there will be more tax legislation that gets proposed in 2022 if the Build Back Better plan doesn't eventually get passed. So we'll have to just see.
Yeah, you know, the president was here about 10 days ago down at the ATA bringing up the merits of the Build Back Better plan and how Kansas City was looking to get, you know, electric buses out of the deal and do a lot more, you know, expansion of transportation projects here. So now that future up in the air and in doubt due to the Build Back Better plan, you know, not getting the 50 votes it needs. Well, Melvin, as we talk about taxes, many people file their return as soon as they receive those W-2s, but a lot of those families have received the advance payments that are, if I'm correct, are going to end. How will that impact how they file taxes next year for those families that receive the advance payments for the earned income credit?
Yeah, so if you had a child, you know, in prior years, in 2020 and before that, the government was sending out, the IRS was sending out an advance on the child tax credit. Now, remember, the child tax credit did increase by $1,000 per child. So if you had a kid that was 6 years of age or older, you would get $3,000 per kid. And so what they did was, starting in July, they would send out a monthly, you know, divided amount of that $3,000. And so, give me a second here. So you'd get, if you had one child, you get $250 a month starting in July. And so by the end of the year, you would have gotten $1,500. And so because you got that $1,500, half of the child tax credit throughout the year, that actually will impact your tax return, because when you go to file your taxes, you would actually have less credit available than you otherwise normally would. And the reason why is because you've received half of your child tax credit throughout the year. So it's important that, you know, people are prepared for that. People are prepared for the fact that for each child they have, essentially they have about $500 less of a credit per child available to them on their tax return. So, you know, if everything remained the same, like you made the same amount of income, have the same, you know, deductions from your paycheck, you would end up with a lower refund because you've been receiving your refund throughout the year. So it's just something that people should be aware of, prepared for. You know, that the refund might be less this year because of that.
So that's going to impact a lot of families who definitely saw that once a year windfall. They received it now during the year, and then now they're going to end up, when they actually file the taxes, getting less of a return. So there's not going to be as much money available, because usually when people get that tax return, they're buying different things. They are feeding money into the economy. And now that we're looking at a time when inflation is high, but they won't have that same amount of money, so there won't be as much money being dumped into the economy due to people receiving the payments earlier and inflation also.
This is true. So, again, if you have, say, two kids, your refund, you know, holding everything else the same, your refund will be about $1,000 less. If you got three kids, it'd be about $1,500 less. So, I mean, the nice thing is throughout the year, because you had been receiving that money, maybe you have more money around this time of year for Christmas and things like that. And so, you know, there's pros and cons to that.
So now the government, as I was saying also, many people usually file right at the beginning as soon as they get that W-2, but this year they're going to need that document from the government's going to send out some documentation, so that's going to have to be also filed with their taxes, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so this document, it's not really something that you absolutely need, but it's a good document to have, because the document that we're talking about here is that the IRS will send a document that says, hey, this is how much you received in your advanced child tax credit payments. And so, I mean, if you know what you received, then, you know, you don't really need it. But for some people, you know, if you, say, opted out, because that was an option for people, you could have opted out during the period of time that they were sending out these payments, you might not necessarily, you know, remember how much you received in child tax credit payments. And so this document is essentially just a record of that. And so I would encourage people to review that to make sure that the IRS's record is the same as the record that you have. So I would highly encourage people to take a look at that document, because some people may remember when they filed their 2020 tax return earlier this year, that you had to tell the IRS when you filed your tax return how much you received in stimulus payments. And if there was a discrepancy between what you said you got versus what the IRS had on record, it delayed your tax return, because the IRS went back and checked to make sure that if you said you didn't get the second stimulus payment, they check and make sure that you didn't actually get it. And that delayed a lot of people's tax returns. And it was newsworthy. The IRS had a significant delay on getting out refunds as a result of all of the, you know, the stimulus payments, and making sure that people claimed on their return what they actually received.
Melvin, we know last year the IRS, well, the federal government and the American Rescue Plan, they exempted the first $10,000 worth of unemployment. How will that roll over into 2020? And will that roll into this year's taxes, or was that just a one-time benefit for the 2021 tax year?
That was a one-time benefit for the 2020 tax year. And so now that we're in the 2021 tax year, if you've got unemployment, it's taxed. Unemployment is normally taxable, but that was a part of the American Rescue Plan Act that allowed for $10,200 of your unemployment compensation to be excluded from your income. And so this year, if you got unemployment, it's taxable. And so that may come as a surprise to some people. Hopefully people plan for that, because, you know, that is kind of a big difference on your tax return if you weren't prepared to pay taxes on the unemployment that you received.
So some people who last year may have gotten a refund or had a low tax liability because they're of that $10,200 being exempted this year could turn around and see themselves with a tax bill or with a significantly reduced return because that money's not being exempted this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always, you know, tell people that, you know, in the United States, it's hard to make money and not pay taxes on it. And so in the case of unemployment, you're getting money, you're receiving money, and the normal rules and the tax laws that you pay taxes on that money. So it was actually a stimulus action that exempted that $10,200 from being taxed. But that is not the case for 2021 and moving forward unless there is a change in the tax law.
So, Melvin, what about individual retirement accounts? First, what is an IRA and how can, let's say first, what's an IRA? What's an individual retirement account?
So an individual retirement account is an account that is an account that you can set up. It's similar to like a bank account. You set up an account and you can put money into this account and get a tax benefit or you get a tax deduction. So the limit for 2020 was $6,000 for a single individual. And so if you didn't make too much money, because there are income limitations to putting money in an IRA, but you could put $6,000, up to $6,000 in an individual retirement account and receive a tax deduction for contributing that money. What that means ultimately is that you get a tax break for saving for retirement. It's an alternative to, say, like a 401k that you might have at work, and that's kind of the reason why that was put into place, is to kind of help people save for retirement, because as we all know, Social Security is not meant to fully fund your retirement. So that is the government's way of kind of helping people and encouraging people to save for retirement.
Melvin, when is the deadline to open and fund an IRA for this tax year? Is it at the end of the month when we hit January 1st, or is it after that date?
The deadline is the tax filing deadline. So you can actually open an IRA and fund it after the tax year. So the tax year ends December 31st of this year, so in just about a week. And you can actually open and put money into an IRA in 2022, as long as you do it before the tax filing deadline, and get a deduction for 2021. So that is the deadline, and it's a good opportunity to save money on your 2021 tax.
So I know some people, you can open up a Roth IRA. Which is better, to open up a Roth, or is it better to open the other type of individual retirement account?
Well, I would say it depends. Depends on your personal financial situation. Ideally, you might have both, you know, over a period of time. Roth is kind of seen as the one that's better. And the reason why is because when you put money into an IRA and you get a tax deduction, when you pull it out later in retirement, you pay tax on the money that you put in because you got a tax deduction for it when you initially put it in. So when you pull it out, you pay tax on that money that you put in. But you also pay tax on the growth or the appreciation of the money that you put in. Just kind of putting numbers to it, if I put $1,000 into an IRA, a traditional IRA, I would get a $1,000 deduction, which means I did not pay tax on that $1,000 I put in. And then when I say it grew to $2,000, so it grew by $1,000. When I pulled that money out in retirement, I would pay tax on $2,000 because the $1,000 that I didn't pay tax on, plus the growth of that, I also have to pay tax on. Now, with a Roth, the money you put in, you paid tax on it. So in my example, that $1,000, you would have paid tax on it. But that growth of that $1,000 that I'm talking about, that you don't pay tax on. And so, you know, typically people see Roth as a more beneficial option. It also has higher income thresholds, so you can make more money and put money into a Roth. And then the other thing that people don't plan for is that retirement accounts, like these pre-tax retirement accounts, like an IRA or a 401k, you have to pull that money out when you reach a certain age. It's called a required minimum distribution. With a Roth IRA, you don't. And so if you do have money, you know, sitting aside somewhere, or you're still working, for instance, and so you don't need the money that's in that retirement account, you can let it stay in that Roth account and it'll continue to grow. Whereas if it was in, you know, 401k or traditional IRA, you'd have to pull that money out and you'd lose out on some of the appreciation that you'd get from the stock market. So Roth is generally considered better, but I would say you should get with a professional, someone who's trained to do that type of financial planning to help you make that determination.
And that's definitely a good point, because if you, well, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but if you don't take those mandatory withdrawals out, the penalties on that can be, they can be a little bit painful. They can be substantial, a little bit painful. So that's something people really need to know, that if you want to choose between the two, the Roth is better because you don't have to have the mandatory withdrawals. So, Melvin, as we talk about, we have a lot of people who are small business owners. They're, you know, running that small business, and their income is what they have coming in now, but many of them may be so small they don't have a retirement plan. What options are available for those who may own a small business to set up an IRA?
So as a small business owner, you can contribute to an individual IRA, just like someone that has a job that is employed versus self-employed. So you can contribute to a traditional IRA or Roth IRA, but those have lower contribution limits. In other words, there's a lower limit as to how much you can put in that account. But for self-employed people, there are some additional retirement options that allow you to get a bigger tax deduction. In other words, you can save more money in taxes by, you know, looking into some of these options. And those options are plenty, more than we have time to even talk about today. But I will mention a couple because of where we are right now. So one that's particularly advantageous because of we're at the end of the year, it is a SEP IRA. It stands for a self-employed pension plan. A SEP IRA is very similar to a traditional IRA account that we talked about, but essentially there's a calculation based on how much money you've made in your business that will ultimately allow you to put more money into an IRA account and save money in tax. I believe the maximum deduction for a SEP IRA is somewhere around $58,000. So if you made enough money, you have to make, you know, above and beyond that $58,000. But if you made enough money in your business, you can actually get a deduction up to $58,000. And so that could be substantial tax savings, you know, for the self-employed person. You know, my recommendation to people who are self-employed is if you have a substantial amount of profit, you really need to get with a CPA so that they can talk to you about your options as far as not paying as much in tax, because you pay more tax as a self-employed person if you're not being strategic about how you're, you know, setting things up. So highly recommend getting with a professional.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Kansas City's community radio station. This is Cowtown Conversation. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guest is Melvin Gatson with Gatson CPA. And we're talking about tax strategies and ramifications from the Build Back Better not being approved as legislation. Stay tuned right back after this short break. We're back. This is Joseph Jackson hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM. And our guest today is Melvin Gatson, who is a CPA with Gatson CPA. So, Melvin, as we stopped, we were talking about the SEP-IRA. And as you was pointed out earlier, the individual retirement account for a regular person doesn't end at the end of the year. They have until the tax deadline of the following year to turn around and make that deposit. When is the deadline for a business owner who may have a small business to open up their self-employed pension individual retirement account?
Well, it is it's the same. So you can actually do a tax extension. And so some self-employed people do this, especially if there is a substantial amount that they can contribute to the SEP IRA. But if you do an extension, a six-month extension on your tax return, you can get all the way up to October 15th to contribute to a SEP IRA. And so it is a good tool to use, but highly encourage you to, you know, work with a professional to ensure that you are paying the necessary taxes at the regular filing deadline. And the reason why is because whenever you do a tax extension from that April 15th deadline, that is an extension to file your taxes. It's not an extension to pay. So the payment due date is always April 15th, unless they change it, because they did extend it, you know, during COVID. But 2021, for 2021 tax year and going forward, as it has been in years past, the deadline to pay your taxes is April 15th. And that doesn't change if you do an extension. So just a friendly reminder to all the taxpayers out there that you know, pay your taxes on time so that you don't get a failure to pay penalty from the IRS.
Melvin, we have what's called a flexible spending account and a health savings account. First, what is a flexible spending account?
So a flexible spending account is it's typically used when you are employed. They do have them for self-employed people as well, but a flexible spending account is kind of a use-it-or-lose-it account. And so I've used them in the past with my job. Essentially, what you can use them for is for, like, healthcare-related expenses or dependent care. So if you have a child in daycare, you can use it for that. How it's typically set up is you make a election when it's open enrollment time with your job to contribute a certain amount to a flexible spending account. There are limits, so they don't allow you to just put an unlimited amount of money in there. But, for example, you could, say, have $2,000 put into this flexible spending account and it'd be deducted from your paycheck over throughout the course of the year. And these are pre-tax deductions. So in other words, you don't pay income tax on the money that's going into a flexible spending account. So you get a tax benefit, which is nice for everyone. And the nice thing with flexible spending accounts is often your employer will pre-fund that account and give you access to the money right away, which is very beneficial if you have, say, medical expenses to take care of, like dental or, you know, there might be other medical expenses that, you know, if you could, you'd like to pay as you go, and that would allow you to do that. So flexible spending accounts is something that I highly recommend people look into. But, yeah, that's a flexible spending account.
So we also have a HSA, a health savings account. What is an HSA and what can it be used for?
Awesome. So one thing about the FSA I failed to mention is that, or just kind of clarify it, FSAs are typically use it or lose it. So if you have $2,000 that you've, you know, set aside to go toward health care, if you haven't used that money by the end of the year, then you actually will lose the money. So now that we're talking about HSAs, it's a little different. HSA stands for a health savings account, or it's used specifically for healthcare related expenses. You get a tax deduction for it. So you basically don't pay tax on the money that you have spent for healthcare related expenses. So a lot of people, they're getting paid from their paycheck, and that's net of tax. And so they're then going to the doctor and paying for their healthcare expenses after having paid tax through their check. A health savings account allows you to take your actual wage before taxes, put money into this savings account, and use that money on your healthcare related expenses. Simply put, you're saving money in taxes by putting the money into this account. I wish I had used the health savings account more, you know, earlier in my career, because it really is, you know, essentially helping you save money. So it's actually one of the most advantageous tax accounts, tax advantaged accounts, because health savings accounts, you can invest the money that you put in it. And so if it grows through your investments in this account, not only did you get a deduction when you put the money in, but you also don't pay tax on any growth in that account. There's no other account that's like that. So highly recommend people to take advantage of it. It is not a use it or lose it account. And so what that means is, you know that you're going to incur healthcare expenses. So it's, if you are able to maximize, you know, and put the maximum amount into a health savings account, highly recommend doing it. You'll thank yourself later.
So, Melvin, it came out yesterday, at least I saw it yesterday, that the president has extended student loan repayments, which they were set to start right after the beginning of the new year until May 1st. So that's going to help a lot of people that, especially in this time of inflation, don't have that money that's being ate. That extra money is being spent on gas, you know, food, different things that have went up in costs. But, Melvin, are there some tax strategies for those that may be on a payment plan based off their income that they can use to be able to lower their student loan payments?
Yeah, there is. So if you are married, this really is something that only applies if you're married, but there may be an opportunity to have a lower student loan payment if your spouse's income, so say you have a student loan and you're on an income-based repayment plan and your spouse's income is substantially higher than yours, well, what's going to happen is when you file a joint income tax return, which is what your income-based repayment plan is based off of, it's based off your income taxes, how much you've shown in income. If your spouse's income is substantially higher than yours, then your spouse's income is causing you to have to pay a higher student loan payment. And so you want to evaluate this, you know, with a tax professional, a CPA, but you want to evaluate, does it make sense for you to file separately? You might pay a little bit more in tax, but your student loan repayment might be a lot less. And so you want to evaluate which of those options makes sense for you and your family, because it could mean having more money. You know, you might pay $500 more in tax, but throughout the course of the year, the student loan payments might be, you know, $2,000, $3,000 less over the course of the year. And so you've essentially had a net savings of, you know, $2,000 in that scenario. And so, you know, I just highly recommend people to look into that. You know, you want someone to look at your kind of overall financial picture with your taxes as well.
So, Melvin, we hear a lot about Dogecoin, Bitcoin, you know, the newest cryptocurrency that comes out tomorrow and the next one after that. Is buying cryptocurrency taxable with your... Is that a taxable income?
It's not. And so not buying it. So right now, cryptocurrency is treated very similar to a stock. It's not a stock, but it's treated like a stock. And so with a stock, when you buy a stock, you know, you buy a share of a company, you don't pay tax. There's no tax implication for buying shares in a stock. You are investing. However, when you sell it, if you sell a stock, you will trigger what is called capital gain or loss. If you've made money, it's a gain. If you've lost money, it's a loss. Now, with cryptocurrency, it's the same. It's treated the same. The only caveat is you can sell cryptocurrency and you can use cryptocurrency. So if you pay for something with your cryptocurrency, you have essentially sold your asset and you would have triggered a capital gain or a loss. And so people just need to be aware that if they're using cryptocurrency to conduct transactions or they are selling their cryptocurrency, like getting out of it because, you know, maybe they made a lot of money and it's starting to dip and so they pull the money out, you have triggered a taxable event. And so get with, you know, your CPA and discuss with them, you know, the tax implications for that. But yes, no tax on buying crypto, but there is tax when you sell it or use it, especially if you've made money in the crypto market.
So, Melvin, as we were talking about earlier about the 401k and required minimum distributions, what is a required minimum distribution?
So, required minimum distribution is the government's way of saying, hey, you have been putting money into a retirement account and not paying tax on it. So, whenever you put money into a 401k, you're not paying income tax on it. You're getting a tax deferral is what it's called. In other words, you're pushing the money that you would have otherwise paid in tax into the future. So you're saying, I don't want to pay tax on that now, you know, while my income is higher. I want to put this money aside and pull it out when my income is lower, when I need it for retirement. Well, while it's in that account, it's growing because the stock market's growing. And the government eventually wants to tax that money. And so they have instituted a rule. It's called a required minimum distribution. And they make you pull it out over your life expectancy once you have reached the age of 70. It got changed to 72 in 2019. But once you get to be age 72, they will take your life expectancy. So if you're 72, you know, typically your life expectancy might be like 88 years old or something like that. It's based on mortality tables that the IRS uses. But in my example, you've got about 16 years, and they're going to make you pull out that money over 16 years. So if you've got, you know, $1 million sitting in a retirement account, Can you imagine how much money you're going to have to pull out over the course of 16 years? A whole lot, exactly. And so what that's going to do is it's going to create a lot of taxes for you. And so that's the reason why people like Roth accounts, because you don't have that required minimum distribution. Something else to talk about with required minimum distributions are that in 2020, you didn't have to pull any money out because of, COVID and the stimulus bills that have been passed. But now you do. So if there are people out there who haven't taken their required minimum distribution, I'd highly encourage you to look into what that amount is and pull it out, because the penalty on not taking your required minimum distribution is 50% of what you should have taken. So if you should have taken $5,000 out, you will get penalized $2,500 for not taking that out. So that's what an RMD, required minimum distribution, is, and that's why it's important.
So, Melvin, what's the earliest that a person can take money out of their 401k? If you have to start taking those required minimum distributions when you're by the time you're 72, when can you begin taking out those distributions so that you don't have to take out as much and see that huge tax liability?
So they do have a tool called a Roth conversion, where you can actually take your money from like a 401k account, what we call pre-tax account, and you can convert that over into a Roth so that you don't end up having to take those out. It's a tool that CPAs and financial advisors use with their clients as a strategy to kind of limit the amount of taxes you pay over the course of your retirement. So you do have that as an option. I do want to mention that. 59.5 is when you can start pulling money out of your 401k, traditional IRAs, and not pay a penalty on it. So there is a 10%, what they call early withdrawal or early distribution penalty, when you pull money out before the ages of 59.5, unless you have an exception. Because there are times where there are exceptions, you can pull that money out. Like if you've had a significant health event where you've got a lot of health care related bills, you can pull that money out without penalty. You can pull it out for like education related expenses. There are some limitations to that. You can pull it out for like first-time home buyer. So there are ways you can pull money out of your retirement account without getting penalized for it. Say if you retire early. I mean, there's a lot of, I actually heard yesterday that Gen Zers are expecting to retire at 55. A lot of people are saying that's wishful thinking, but the point is that if you retire early and you take money out of your retirement account before the age of 59, as long as you do it in what they call substantially equal payments, so basically you're taking the same amount out and you deplete your account over, you know, a certain amount of time with substantially equal payments, you also avoid that 10% penalty. So there's a number of ways you can pull money out, but you know, I highly recommend using the expertise of a professional to discuss your options there.
And as we start closing out, Melvin, how important is it for small business owners, but also some people that may have these 401k accounts, to get that tax representation help so that they can not see a lot of their hard-earned money go away due to not knowing and fees and different things?
Yeah, it's very important to use someone who is a tax professional. There are a number of services out there that allow you to kind of do it yourself. But, you know, generally, what I've seen in my experience is that there's things that you miss when you're not trained to do it. So I would say if you've got anything beyond just like a regular W-2, and you start, you know, you're pulling money out of retirement, you've got complexity in your financial situation because of you know, any number of factors, I'd highly recommend using a tax professional so that they can help you save money in tax, because you never want to pay more money in tax than you should be paying.
So, Melvin, when does the tax season start for you, and when you start to see things start to really start to heat up?
You know, honestly, I've been busy all year, you know, because I do help business owners, you know, track their accounting, plan for tax time. I'm busy all year round, but tax season really starts to kick off like mid to late January. You know, people start getting tax documents, and so they're ready to file. So mid-January, and it pretty much, you know, doesn't stop until after the extended deadline.
So, Melvin, do you have a website, and what's the best way to contact you?
Yeah, I do have a website. It is GatsonCPA.com. I'm also on Facebook, LinkedIn. So if you connect with me on any one of those sources, my contact information is there. GatsonCPA.com is probably the easiest way. That's GatsonCPA.com.
And as we close out, do you have any last pieces of advice for people?
Don't pay more taxes than you should. Get with a tax professional that can help you make that determination. At least, I'd say once every few years, talk to a tax professional and have them review your prior year tax returns and your current year tax return, and make sure you're not paying more in tax than you should be.
I want to thank Melvin Gatson, CPA, for being our guest today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. The Boys and Girls Club will be waiving their fees for children during the winter break until January 3rd. And this offer is for those who have children who are from ages 5 through 18. And it's available each day from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. So to get more information and find out how to register, call your nearest Boys and Girls Club for more information. Councilman Brandon Ellington will host his weekly food distribution today at Mount Sinai Church, located at 3634 Brooklyn. The event will start at 10 o'clock and will go until noon. So if you know somebody that's in need this holiday season, there's a food distribution today, like I said, at Mount Sinai, 3634 Brooklyn, from 10 a.m. to noon. I would like to take this time to thank everybody. Happy holidays, and, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, and ask that you have a great day. Omicron is rising, folks, and COVID numbers are going up. Please stay safe, wear masks when you're around your family. Have a great day, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.